Attention, you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. The active ingredient in this program is common sense, which has been documented to prevent and even cure liberalism. Be advised that listening may cause you to lean to the right. The doctor will be with you momentarily. Here's your host, Todd Huff.
You know, I said this yesterday, and I've said this before, but American weakness that has been portrayed by the commander-in-chief, weakness that has been portrayed by his administration in the so-called nuclear deal with Iran. These things are highly provocative. You know, we're worried, the left is worried about the cowboy George W. Bush, for example. People wring their hands wondering if Donald Trump is going to, should he become president, usher in World War III. But the real danger is Americans leading this country who are absolutely weak. And that is what we have in the White House today. And if you haven't seen this, I encourage you to take a look at this video of the Americans captured in Iran, whose boat was seized and whatever else happened here, which, you know, who knows what's, I don't know what's going on with this story. All I know is the Iranians captured two U.S. boats and 10 sailors. Nine of which were men, one was female. They take the one female, make her wear a headscarf. Of course, I'm still supposed to believe that the real war on women, the real place that is against women's rights, the real group of people that are inclined every day to abuse and take advantage of women are Republicans, are conservatives. But this is perfectly fine and acceptable. I mean, well, they're over there having tea or something, the way that this is being portrayed. I mean, this is a very, very aggressive thing to do. The Iranians capture our soldiers. And then not only that, they've got pictures of them on their knees with their hands behind their head. And, of course, the left is minimizing this dramatically because, hey, after all, they gave us back our soldiers. I mean, I even used the Twitter hashtag, bring back our sailors. A, because we needed to get our sailors back, but B, to point out that the White House seems more concerned with other things than talking about something of this level of importance. But nonetheless, Iran goes around and parades them, puts them in front of a video camera, questions them. The captain apologizes for being there, tells us that the Iranian people have been wonderful. Look, and I get it. I get it. I mean, this guy's in there. I don't want to be critical of him. He's trying to get his fellow sailors out of there alive. That's what he's trying to do. Probably in the back of his mind, he knows that if I don't get us out of here, I have no idea what the administration's going to do. I have no idea if we'll be here for years. I mean, we see what happens when they've captured taken our other folks hostage and jailed them, the journalists and so forth. And I don't blame him. But what happened? Whatever happened, and I truly don't know this. I haven't had time to look into this, but whatever happened to name, rank, and serial number? I mean, when I was a young man and I would see, you know, these interviews, and this is before my time, incidentally, but these interviews of soldiers in the Vietnam War, they would repeatedly say, you know, Billy Smith, Sergeant, and then give off their serial number to every question that was asked of them. You know, sometimes when they were put on TV, you've seen the folks that would blink in Morse code and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be overly critical of this guy, because they're dealing with a maniacal regime. But regardless, you know, I guess is that not protocol anymore because Iran is our friend? Is that, I mean, that's the sort of thing I could see the Obama administration telling them. I mean, the bigger enemy Obama would tell those in the military are those who deny global warming, the climate change deniers. I mean, we know that the main mission of NASA is to reach out to Muslims. I mean, we've seen this. And, of course, tell us about the dangers of climate change. I mean, maybe that's becoming the main mission of the U.S. Navy as well. I don't know. The point is that they humiliated our sailors. They humiliated our country. They made a mockery of this. Oh, yes, they returned our boats and our sailors. But not before making this into a big PR stunt. And this, of course, is the week that some of this stupid nuclear Iran deal is supposed to take effect. And they're taking our folks hostage. It's hostage. I don't want to hear they detained them. I don't want to hear that they brought them in for questioning. They took them as hostages. They came in. I mean, I don't know if we were in their waters or not. That's what's being said, but I don't believe anything coming out of this administration. The Iranians come in at gunpoint. Our folks are clearly not doing anything nefarious. And they bring them in. They seize our equipment. And can you imagine if the shoe was on the other foot here? There would be outrage if we did something like this. Complete and utter outrage. Anyway, this is what happens when American weakness is portrayed around the world. This is exactly what happens. We've got one more year of this. I'm being honest when I say this. I get a little bit nervous. When you look around the world, when you look around the world and all that's going on, when you look at this Muslim invasion of, say, Germany, you look at these, I don't know if you follow this much, but all of these rapes that happened on New Year's Eve. These Islamic rapes. Yes, that's what they are claiming. You can say that these are radical Muslims, but they are claiming that these rapes are done with the justification of Islamic law. Taking these white European women, there was a tweet that went out the day before. There's a term for this, and I'll look it up here after the first break. But there's a term for this forced sexual encounter, and these maniacal animals. There's videos of these online. I'll post to one of them. It's brutal. There's literally, dozens, potentially hundreds. I don't know. There's a lot of these men that go after, isolate, or find these isolated women and take them off and rape them. There's a group of rapists, there's a group of watchers, and there's a group of folks that form a perimeter that serve as people that are watching for any authorities that may come by. And as I'm watching this go on, I'm watching them seize these women, and I'm thinking about, God forbid, if something like that ever happened in the United States. But I'm thinking about our gun laws, and I'm told how, you know, you shouldn't have more than a certain number of bullets in your gun. You know, there's never a need for that. I mean, this is to the point where a gun would only do so much. You would run out of bullets. You would run out of bullets before your attackers were shot and killed. This is out of control. And we're ushering this, we're opening the door to this coming to the United States. We are. I know some of you are saying, but Todd, this is the United States. But Todd, you know, come on, that's different. Europe's a smaller country, or a smaller population, those individual countries. Germany is not as big and as powerful as the United States. I mean, something like that would never happen here. Well, I mean, I disagree. It'll happen here if we allow it to happen here. It'll happen here if we usher in large droves of people that we don't know anything about, that potentially share a faith, a religious faith, that allows them, that even permits them, maybe even encourages them to treat women this way, or whatever other issue, whether you look at terrorism or attacks on women. But my point is, American weakness, again, provokes this. I'm not blaming the United States for that attack on the women. But if you don't stand up and I should say in general, weakness provokes that. And specifically, weakness in America, refusal to do anything that tries to decide if these folks are coming to this country, or if there's no way to determine if they're dangerous, if they will embrace this sort of ideology, why on earth are we letting them in? And it's all fun and games until you start potentially putting my wife, my children, my mom, other people at risk for these potentially vile, criminal, out-of-control folks. It's happening in Europe, and it's happening with the refugees. And I don't know why there's a desire by some to hide our heads in the sand when you see a group of Muslim Arabs that have been tied to refugees committing these atrocious acts. We want to bury our heads in the sand and pretend like that's not the case. It is the case. It's unfortunate. But now we know what's going on. And until we know how to identify, this is not an implication of all Muslim Arabs, because they're not all doing it, but there is a big group that's doing it. And until we get tough, until we stop being weak, we are only allowing this. We are provoking this. We are encouraging them to further act. And I saw a Navy, I think it was a Navy SEAL, some Special Forces guy. I was watching a TV show the other night, a new show that I started watching. I think it's called Live to Tell. It's on the American Heroes channel or Military channel or something like this. And they asked this old veteran. Now, he wasn't even talking about this issue, but he was talking about ISIS. And he said, I'm told there's 100,000 ISIS fighters. Whenever this video was recorded, that's what the estimates were anyway. Who knows what the numbers are now? But he said, the way to beat them, you find them, you put a bullet in one's head, and you find the next one, and you put a bullet in his head, and you find the next one, and you put a bullet in his head. That may sound radical, over the top, unnecessarily violent to some, but you look at the consequences of being weak, of not facing this challenge head on. And it means bad, bad things for Americans, bad, bad things for Europeans, bad, bad things for anyone who's not of the Muslim faith. And it's dangerous. It's absolutely 100% dangerous. And we've got to stop it. Back in a minute. Make sure your booster shots are up to date by signing up for our free monthly email newsletter. It's educational, it's fun, and it's free. Sign up today by going to theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. That's theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. For you, the listeners of The Antidote to Liberalism, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I've been a member of Audible since May of 2014, and I love it. I've listened to novels, books on business, political books, you name it. In fact, one of my most recent downloads was given to me by one of our listeners, Ben Carson's America the Beautiful. What a good man and solid presidential candidate. But if you'd rather check out a great novel instead, I highly recommend The 12th Imam by Joel Rosenberg. Of course, you'll want to get the rest of his books in the series after that, too. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/antidote. Again, that's audibletrial.com/antidote for your free audiobook. There's nothing to lose with this free trial, so why not give it a try? Well, welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. By the way, today is Thursday, January 14th. Republicans debate yet again. Democrats remain in hiding. Don't blame them. Continue to bunker down. Hunker down in your bunkers. Hide your faces. Because bad things happen to especially Hillary Clinton when she shows her face, when she goes to answer any questions, blah, blah. Well, more about that in a minute. But I promised you during the break I was going to look up the word for the brutal gang rapes that are happening, that are being committed by groups of Muslim refugees that have entered into Europe. For example, in Cologne, Germany on New Year's Eve. The word is Taharush. T-A-H-A-R-U-S-H, Taharush. I guess, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but that's the Muslim term for that. You can look it up later if you like, but I just wanted to pass that along. But the debate is tonight. We're down to what, six or, I think, seven on the main stage. We've got Trump, Cruz, Rubio, Carson, Jeb, John Kasich, and Chris Christie. We learned earlier this week, or maybe last week, that Carly and Rand Paul would be on the secondary debate stage. And we also learned that Rand Paul had said he would not compete on the secondary debate stage. I don't honestly know. I haven't seen if he's going to be competing or not. But anyway, debates tonight, you know, there's probably going to be some fireworks. We're 18 days away from the Iowa caucus. It's down to crunch time. People are making their final decisions. Ted Cruz is leading in some polls. Of course, Donald Trump is leading in other polls, particularly in Iowa. And Trump and Cruz, they begin to exchange some jabs. You know, Trump has been questioning whether or not Cruz can be president because he was born to an American mother in Canada. Cruz, I believe, called Donald Trump something. I don't know, desperate or made some remark that he's getting, that Donald Trump is getting a little bit worried or desperate or concerned or something. But so this might be, there might be some fireworks tonight. I mean, there may not be. Trump, if we know anything about Trump, he's somewhat unpredictable, right? I mean, you think you know what he's going to do, and sometimes he does it, and sometimes he doesn't do it. He's not afraid, that's for sure. He's a lot more methodical, though, than I think the average person, than the average political pundit gives him credit. But anyway, we'll see what happens tonight. Also, could be interesting to see any exchange between Jeb and Marco Rubio. Jeb has apparently gone after the height of Marco Rubio. So literally just his stance, not his stance on a particular issue. Jeb is attacking the actual physical stance, the stature of Marco Rubio. It reminded me as I read the story about King Saul and King David in the Old Testament. The Jews wanted demanded a king, an earthly king. And they were first given King Saul, who turned out to be a madman. In fact, tried to kill King David, well, David before he was king. But King Saul looked the part. King Saul looked like he should be the king. He was tall in stature, and he was handsome, and had all the right qualities. It reminds me, as I'm saying this, I mean, just the way some people voted for President Obama. You know, he's a black man. He speaks well. Some people thought he was good looking. And by the way, did you see his jump shot? I mean, this guy is just so cool. He wanted a college football playoff. I mean, these were some of the reasons. I don't even... Is that a reason? These were some of the cited reasons by folks that supported him in 2008. He's black. He's got a jump shot that's awesome. Super smooth, great talker. Makes people faint in the audience. And that's how they... That's what they liked about King Saul in the Old Testament. Turns out he was not the best man for the job, especially there at the end. King David, on the other hand, if you remember the story there, for those of you who are Christians or are familiar with the Bible, you'll remember that Jesse, father of David, was instructed to bring his sons and have them reviewed, have them examined, and God was going to tell the prophet which son would be king. And he brought all of his sons in, supposedly brought them all in, and the prophet said, none of these are the sons that God wants to anoint as king. Do you have another son? He's like, well, I do have another son, but he's tending the sheep in the fields. It's King David. He's out keeping the flock safe, watching over the flock, doing the job he's supposed to be doing, minding his own business. And Samuel says, bring him to me. And when he brings him in, it says that, you know, it sounds like David was a good-looking young guy too, but David didn't have the stature. He was a smaller guy. He was the youngest, I believe, the youngest of his brothers. And this is who God told Samuel to anoint as the next king over, king of Israel. Kind of funny if you think about it. You know, we've got all these lifetime politicians with all these credentials. And don't hear me saying what I'm not saying here. I'm not saying that God has anointed anyone president of the United States. I'm not saying that. But if you just look at this on face value, and if you compare how the people reacted to King Saul and how he looked the part and how he, you know, just because of external things, they chose him or they wanted him. They were okay with him being their king. But David, his own father, didn't even think he was going to be considered. In fact, he left him to do his job. Maintain the family business, right? Keep him in the fields, working in the private sector. He's not going around giving speeches and lectures, and he's out minding the family business, doing what he's supposed to be doing, working for an honest living, protecting the sheep. And there's stories of David fighting off some very dangerous animals from the sheep. I mean, David was a warrior, a tough guy. He wasn't a pushover. He wasn't today's metrosexual. In fact, I saw an article a couple of weeks ago. There's a new term for the modern metrosexual. I forget what it is. I'm sure it's just as edifying and empowering and all of that as metrosexual. But nonetheless, David, working for a living, private sector, not running around giving speeches and getting honorary, you know, degrees at the universities he speaks at, and isn't given a primetime, slot to lecture the nation about gun control. Just out minding his own business. Doesn't even get the attention, the consideration of his own father to be the leader of Israel. And that king David, although he was not a perfect man, he made many mistakes. And of course, we all know about Bathsheba. We know about her husband, Uriah. He made some bad decisions. But I tell you, God says he was a man after his own heart. And we learn much from David in Scripture. And there's much that David did right. Father of Solomon. Interestingly, the mother of Solomon was Bathsheba. Even though God wasn't happy with that, he can still work with it. But the point is, my point in saying all this is, which of these candidates falls into those two categories? Which of these candidates has credentials on the inside to be president of the United States? And which of these candidates only wants to look the part? I mean, we know on the Democrat, I mean, Hillary Clinton to me, I mean, this is blatantly obvious. Even though she's losing the support of the base, I've seen communist Van Jones, true communist, by the way, not just me being using hyperbole here, but the communist Van Jones is out explaining why the base is abandoning her, excuse me. But look at those folks on the stage. Which of those folks? I mean, just so many ideas running through my head. Look at, we make fun on here of sexy Martin O'Malley. And I have fun with this. I got to tell you, it's one of the most enjoyable things I say on this program. Because it's based in truth. The only thing I've seen about this guy, and I mean this, the only thing I've seen about this guy favorably is the chatter on Twitter or social media about his abs. Sounds like Obama's jump shot. Sounds like King Saul's appearance to me. And what are the credentials here? He's got sexy abs, apparently. I mean, this is how people vote. I mean, like it or not, this is how many of them will vote. Hillary Clinton, she's a woman. I mean, look at the things we're told about her. She's a woman. She's a grandma. She's the wife of Bill Clinton, who was president when the economy was roaring back in the 90s. I always want to say, well, what are the policies that were implemented back in the 90s? And did the Republican-led House have anything to do with that? And I mean, it turns out they had quite a bit to do with that. But my point is, these things are superficial. Now, Bernie Sanders is ideological. I mean, we should be able to wipe the floor with his ideology, but I mean, at least he has an ideology. The nutty professor's up there proclaiming the wonders of socialism, proclaiming that he can make life fair, proclaiming that he can fix many of our problems just by making us embrace the ideals of socialism. Unfortunately, it fails everywhere that it's tried. But at least he has an ideology. And I mean, Hillary Clinton, don't misunderstand me, is a socialist as well. But the way she campaigns is, I'm a woman. I'm a grandma. I'm Chelsea's mom. You know, but even if you look at their ideology, it's all giveaways. The ideology is, oh, well, you want to go to college and you can't afford it, we'll pay for that. Oh, you want to have children and you can't afford them, we'll help pay for that. Oh, you want to have some housing, you want to have a job, we'll train you for jobs. It's a pretty poor ideology, if you ask me. Awfully patronizing to the voting base. But as you listen to this, I'm just sharing with you as I've just kind of a thought here. As you listen to these candidates, which ones really have the internal capabilities, the internal fortitude and strength, the internal, the wisdom. Which one of these folks, or there's going to be more than one, there are none of them on the Democrat side, by the way, which of them embrace the Constitution and liberty? Conservatism, constitutional conservatism, conservative values. Which one of these folks, or which of these folks will display American strength around the world? Which of these folks, if they were president, would have never seen our sailors with their hands behind their head, kneeling on their boat, and then paraded in front of the Iranian television cameras? Which of these folks running for president would have not made that happen? I alluded to this yesterday. When Ronald Reagan, the first day he stepped into office, as he was wrapping up his inauguration address, the Iranians put hostages on airplanes and sent them back to the United States, or wherever they sent them, but eventually back to the United States. Those folks who were hostages for 444 days or something. And what was magical about the 444th day? Ronald Reagan. That's what it was. There was a new leader in charge. So as you watch this debate, those are the questions I ask myself. Which of these folks, who cares what they look like? Who cares if, not to pick on any one particular candidate, but who cares if Rubio sounds right? Or to Jeb's point, who cares if Rubio's too short? I mean, which of these folks has the ability to lead this country? Which of these folks has the ability to usher in constitutional conservatism again? And it could be more than one. I'm not even picking any candidate. I mean, I have the few that I prefer. I'm not going to really get into that right now. But not which one of them has the best one-liner. I mean, come on. What is this, junior high? In some ways, I think it is, unfortunately. But anyway, I'm running a little bit long here in the second segment, so let me take one more break. We'll get back and talk about a few more things before we wrap up for the day, so sit tight. See you in a minute. I'm not a full-time podcaster, but I play one on this show. My daytime job is running a small business called Huff Promotional Strategies. We are a graphic design and promotional products company that helps clients with a wide range of projects ranging from logos and websites to promotional products and apparel. We have experience working with well-known brands, small businesses like ours, and everything in between. So if you need help with marketing or promotional products, why not give us a try? Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today for more information, and you'll find a 10% discount code that we will apply to your next order. We work with businesses, churches, schools, civic groups, sports leagues. You get the idea. Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today to learn more and to get your 10% discount code. That's huffpromotional.com/podcast. Welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. You know, before the break, we were talking about the debate. We were talking about the Iran hostage situation. Did you also see that there was a terrorist attack overnight, Jakarta, Indonesia? Reports are that it was meant to be a similar style attack to what we saw in Paris. Back on, November 13th, I believe? So a couple months ago? Of course, we're going to find out this is a terroristic attack committed by Muslims in the name of Allah. But undoubtedly, somebody in the left is exploring the possibility this was a Tea Party event, a Tea Party rally gone awry. And it just went out of control. Tea Party now apparently operating in Jakarta. But in all seriousness, I mean, these are serious times. Two people lost their lives. And I can't speak on Indonesia's position on terrorism. I mean, obviously, I'm sure they're trying to find ways to stop it. But I don't know specifically what those are. But until we as a nation and others, you know, even as a group of nations, I'm not saying like United Nations as one, you know, unilateral organization that applies to all, but just as a group of autonomous nations, until we come together and get serious about what causes this stuff. I mean, you're not going to stop all of it. I don't see any way possible that you're going to stop one crazy madman from unleashing hell on somebody. That's just not going to happen. But you can beat back this ideology. You can fight it in the region that it's growing, which by complete coincidence is in the Muslim areas of the Middle East. By the Muslim areas of the Middle East that are controlled by ISIS, by countries that are understanding of terrorism, that are sympathetic to terrorism. But we can't be afraid of this. I mean, that's what they want. That's the whole idea. That's the whole point. They want to get the other side to capitulate and to see things from their perspective and to take steps in their government to maybe allow for Sharia law, to be more sympathetic to their cause, to what have you. And we're past the point where we can just remain silent and hope this goes away and pretend that it's not the people committing it that are committing it. So anyway, another terrorist attack. Unfortunate terrorist attack. Taking the lives of at least two people. I saw that there were five terrorists. They all lost their lives, I believe, from the reports I read. One more thing I wanted to share with you before we wrap up for the day. I saw yesterday there was this undercover operation at Cornell University, and I don't have the name of the group in front of me that did this. I want to say it was called Project Veritas. Because I did watch the video, but there was a young man posing as a Arabic student, and he went into, I think it was the assistant dean or something at Cornell University, his office, and he said, "Hey, I want to start a I'm summarizing here. I want to start a new school organization, and I'm just wanting to make sure that this is okay to do. I want to have an organization that, you know, sends supplies or sends kind of care packages to freedom fighters in the Middle East." And this conversation goes on, and he eventually mentions the names of ISIS, and you know, he asks if they could possibly bring in a freedom fighter to speak at Cornell University's, one of their, like a 13,000-seat auditorium. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, 1,300-seat auditorium. And the guy said, "Well, you could probably do that. We have groups that do things like that all the time." And he keeps upping the ante. Finally, he gets to the very end of his little series of questions with this assistant dean or what have you. And he says, "Well, what if I wanted to bring in someone to run a training camp, like an ISIS training camp?" And the guy didn't tell him flat out no. The guy didn't say, I need to have you speak with police, with campus authorities about this." The guy didn't raise any questions about his, you know, the dean didn't question this alleged student, this undercover student's commitment to ISIS. I mean, there should have been red flags everywhere with this guy. But none of them triggered any sort of question. In fact, all he said was, "Well, we would have to check on that. It's a possibility." In fact, he made the comment that it was like bringing in a football coach or a coach for a sports team. And where they do these summer camps and they bring in, I don't know, you bring in Coach Bill Belichick. You bring in a wide receiver coach for your football team. You bring in Coach Tom Crean. You bring in Nick Saban or Dabo Sweeney from Clemson. He You talk some X's and O's with your players. You teach a few new techniques. I mean, what's the difference? ISIS training camp, Nick Saban. I mean, what the world's the difference there? I mean, this is the mentality of university campuses. And my guess is, if you were to do this nationwide, it would be astounding, astonishing. We would be flabbergasted at how many folks, how many of these directors of campus activities or assistant deans or whoever's involved in making these decisions would say, well, you know, it's all part of the educational experience. ISIS. We're talking about ISIS. And this guy was apparently fine with bringing in ISIS, just like it's bringing in, what, Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, any other coach. I mean, you're just, they're teaching people how to do a particular thing. I mean, you're teaching technique. You know, you need to know how to hold the AK-47. You need to know how to strap on the C4. You need to know how to scream Allahu Akbar. Who else can tell you that if it's not some sort of a instructor, an ISIS coach, a training camp? It's physical fitness. I mean, this might fall under Obama's, one of his physical activity campaigns, for all I know. Insanity. Absolute insanity running the show here. But guys, that's got to do it for me today. I got to wrap up. As always, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Email address, should you want to contact me, is todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com, or you can always reach out to me directly on Twitter. Twitter handle is @commonsensegear. So, guys, have a great day. Enjoy the debate. We'll talk about that tomorrow, and we'll see you soon. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Your inoculations are now up to date. But since the disease of liberalism is ubiquitous and highly contagious, we need to see you again tomorrow. In the meantime, to help you boost your immunity, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast.